The FBI in peace and war. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's transcribed story, The Bungler.
Hello?
Hello, Alice. Alice, it's me. I'm still down at the bank. But maybe you better go ahead and eat your supper.
Oh, well, I'll wait,
Stanley. No, you go ahead. I'm not coming home tonight, Allie.
You're not coming home?
No, I'm not coming home at all. I'm going away for a while. I don't know exactly where, but I'll write to you if I can. Now, don't try
Stanley,
to...
Stanley, what's the matter? What are you talking about?
I can't tell you now, Allie. Something has happened down here. Something I've done. You'll probably find out anyway.
Stanley, look. Wait there.
Bye,
I'll
Allie.
Come down and we...
Look, I'm sorry this happened, but I couldn't help it. Take care of yourself, Allie. Take good care of yourself.
Stanley Phillips, aged 31, was a teller at the Suburban National Bank where he had worked for 10 years. Stanley had been married for 7 of those years and had lived uneventfully in a 3-room apartment. He had one passionate and consuming interest in life, motorboats. For 6 months before his purchase of a 16-foot speedboat, Stanley had been embezzling small sums of money from the bank. But he was clumsy and inept at hiding his thefts. The night before an audit, Stanley ran away, and it was found he had stolen a total of $5,500.
How could he? How could he have done a thing like that?
I don't know, Allie. Do you want another cup of coffee?
No, thanks. Ma, I didn't even know him, did I? All those years, and I didn't know a thing about him.
Who knows anybody, even themselves?
If he wanted the boat so bad, we could have saved the money. Why didn't he tell me?
Allie, suppose you lie down a while. Those FBI fellas will be back. Get a little sleep.
Oh, I can't, Ma. What's the use of trying?
All right.
Maybe I'll go back to the apartment.
No, you're going to stay here at the house with me. You've got your own room upstairs, and no one will bother you.
All right. But if Stanley should call the apartment...
If what?
Well, he'll call me sometime. I know he will.
Allie, I don't want you to talk to him, ever.
I'd have to.
You can't, Allie.
Ma, he isn't a racketeer or a hoodlum.
He took $5,000 of other people's money.
Yes, I know.
And he didn't think of you when he did it.
Oh, Ma.
He didn't. All he thought about was himself and that stupid boat. What right did he have to do a thing like this to you?
Well, he must have meant to put the money back sometime.
Allie.
He must have, Ma.
All right, Alice. All right.
Maybe I will have a little more coffee.
Yes, it'll do you good.
I'll bring my things over tomorrow from the apartment.
Yes. You want cream?
No, just black. Ma.
Yes?
I know just what he'd say if he was here now. He'd say, Allie, I was only borrowing the money temporarily.
Yeah, sure, he was just borrowing. But he leaves you here to talk to cops, to have your picture in the paper. Wife of embezzlement.
Ma!
You'll have to take it, Allie, not him. Never mind if you didn't even know about it. You're his wife, and they're not going to let you alone from now on. Not till they catch him.
They will catch him, won't they? Stanley's such a bungler. They're sure to catch him sometime.
Although Stanley Phillips was clumsy in crime, he did manage to disappear for more than 6 months. During that time, he made no attempt to get in touch with his wife, and the strict surveillance we had maintained was relaxed a little. It was then that a long-distance call reached Alice Phillips at 8:30 one morning.
Stanley, where are you?
I don't want to tell you, Alice. It'll only get you in trouble. But listen, I need a little money. I haven't been too well.
Oh, Stanley.
Look, if I give you a name and a post office box, could you let me have $50?
Oh, of course, Stan. But listen, if you're sick, go to a doctor, please. Will you promise
me? Yeah,
I
will. You just send me the money, huh? Send it care of Frederick Milson.
Stanley? Stanley! Ma, I didn't know you were home.
I was upstairs taking a nap.
Stanley just phoned.
I know. I listened on the extension.
What?
I'm sorry, Alice. I had a feeling...
Well, right if you got to snoop on my calls.
I can't help it, Alice. I had a feeling it might be him. I want them to catch him.
Ma!
I do. Then it'll be over, and you'll stop crying and worrying yourself into skin and bones.
You had no right to listen in.
Well, I did. I'm glad you don't know where to send him the money.
He's sick, Ma. You heard him.
Yes, I heard. The same old whine. He can't take care of himself. He needs help.
He does. He needs me.
Alice.
Well, he does.
And I suppose you'd go to him right this minute if you knew where he was.
I suppose I would.
Oh, Alice.
Ma, you can't be married to someone for 7 years and then all of a sudden...
Alice, darling, the man is a criminal. He's wanted by the police.
I'm still married to him.
He's going to be caught and sent to jail.
Maybe he won't be. Maybe he's smarter than he was 6 months ago.
All right, Alice, there's no use arguing. 8:45... And you better get down to the office.
I'm not going to the office.
Why?
They fired me. Mr. Maxwell said they were cutting down on the staff.
That isn't true, is it? They're cutting down.
No. They found out I was using my maiden name.
I'm sorry, darling.
That's all right. They did it very gracefully. They didn't even mention Stanley.
Well, if you're not going downtown...
I am. I've got an appointment at the employment agency. I'll just use my right name, that's all. I haven't got anything to hide.
All right, dear.
I'll be home for lunch if you've got anything.
There's plenty. You come home.
I will.
Alice.
Yes?
Come home early, will you?
Yes. I will.
Hello, operator. Will you get me the downtown office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation?
Back to the bungler in just a moment.
The actions of all American military men are governed by a code of conduct. To General William Dean, while a prisoner of war in Korea, the code meant a stubborn allegiance to his president. During an early interrogation by his North Korean captors, General Dean was asked to make an open statement condemning what they called the aggressive policy of the United States dictated by the president. But General Dean refused, saying, "As a professional soldier of the United States, I cannot criticize our president, because the president is the supreme commander of the United States Army. I swore this when I joined the Army." That's what the code meant to General Dean. That's what it means to any American in uniform.
And now, Act Two of tonight's story, The Bungler. After Alice Phillips' mother had told us about the phone call, we knew two things. Phillips was in Bay City, and he was probably using the name Frederick Milson. Adding a third element to this, the fact that Bay City had a large public boatyard, we began looking in this area. After several days, we came to a Marine service station. The owner of the station recognized Phillips' picture immediately.
Sure, that's Fred Milson. He worked here for 3 months. Then I had to let him go.
Why, Mr. Wrigley?
Well, he had some sort of trouble with his back. I don't know what it was, but it got so he couldn't even lift one of those five-horse outboards. And we service a lot of outboards, and I just had to let him go.
Was he pretty good with the boats?
Yes, sir, I'll say that much. He was good with the boats. Matter of fact, he was kind of a nut about boats. Said he owned a Sterling speed craft, but I didn't believe him. Those Sterlings cost over $5,000.
Have you any idea where Milson is now?
No, I can't say as I have.
He hasn't been in touch with you since he left?
No, and I guess he wouldn't be either. We had a kind of an argument when he left. He said I hadn't a right to fire him, and I said if he couldn't do a day's work, well, you know how those things go.
This back ailment he had, Mr. Wrigley, Do you know whether he saw a doctor?
No, I don't. I told him to see Doc Evans up there on Bayview Avenue, but I don't know whether he did. Say, I don't suppose any of my business, but is he in some kind of trouble?
We were coming to that. Yes, he's in trouble. He's wanted for embezzlement. He took money from a bank in Bridgetown.
Embezzlement? Fred Milson?
His right name is Stanley Phillips.
Embezzlement? A quiet little fellow like Fred?
That's right.
Well, now, I certainly wouldn't have believed something like that. He didn't drink or run around or anything.
We know. Mr. Wrigley, we're going to give you a phone number to call if Phillips ever gets in touch with you again. Will you call this number immediately if you hear anything about him?
Yes, I sure will. But Fred Milson, you'd never think that a fellow like that was the type, would you?
There is no particular type for that kind of crime, Mr. Wrigley. It attracts all sorts of people.
After our visit to the Marine Service Station, we saw a Dr. Evans who had treated Phillips for the back ailment. As we learned later, it was just at this time that Phillips came back to Bridgetown and stayed several hours, most of these hours in the Bridgetown Memorial Park, just across from his mother-in-law's house.
Alice! Alice, over here!
Stanley!
Hello, Allie. I've been waiting here for hours. I thought I was going to miss you.
Stanley, don't you know every policeman in town is looking for you?
Well, sure, but nobody's ever in the park after six. Well, how are you, Allie? I've been wanting to...
Oh, Stan, you shouldn't have.
I missed you something terrible, Allie. Did you...
Yes, yes, but please, Aunt...
I'm only going to stay a couple of minutes. Oh, Allie.
Oh, Stanley, why did you do a crazy thing like that?
I don't know, honestly. At home. First, I only took a little bit. I was going to put it back, but something always came up.
If you only had told me about the bomb.
I know. I never do anything right. Listen, Allie, you got any money now?
Money?
Well, you said when I called you...
Well, I had some men, but I lost my job. I spent it.
Well, you gotta get me at least $200, Allie.
$200? Where would I
get it? Well, borrow it somewhere.
Without a job, I couldn't stay.
Well, then get it from your mother. She has plenty.
Oh, Stanley.
You gotta give me some money until I get on my feet, Allie. I got something wrong with my back.
Oh, Stanley.
I don't know what it is, but I have to have electric treatments or it can't work. Now, look, you can send it to this address. It's a garage. They let me sleep in an upstairs room. Allie, get me the money somehow.
I'll try.
I'm gonna count on you. Bye, Allie. I'm sorry things are... Well, I'm sorry they turned out the way they did. Don't take long with the money.
Oh, Stanley.
$200 is a lot of money, Allie. I can't...
I want to take this course, Ma. If I knew typing and could take dictation, I could get a job easy.
Where would you take the course?
Oh, downtown. There's a school on Market Street.
Allie, you want the money for Stanley, don't you?
For Stanley? Well, where did you get a crazy idea like that?
Did he call you again?
Of course he didn't, and you've no right
to... He must have called you again, Allie. Please don't get mixed up with him. He'll only bring you more trouble.
Are you going to give me the $200?
No, I'm not, because it's for him.
Please, Ma, I've never asked you for anything like this before.
No, Allie.
Ma, he needs the money desperately. He's sick. He can't work. Please, I beg you.
I can't do it, Alice.
Please.
And if you tell me where he is, I'll have to turn him over to the police.
How could you? How could you do a thing like that? This is Stanley.
I have to.
Oh, stop it. Stop talking so full of morals. I'm married to Stanley. He's my husband. I promised to love him. I promised...
He promised things too, Alice. He had obligations to you.
Well, can't someone make a mistake? One mistake?
I won't argue with you again, Alice. And I won't give you any money.
All right. If you won't, I can't make you. But I'm not going to live here. I don't have to stay here anymore.
Alice, don't be foolish, please.
I'll stay with Nancy or one of the girls till I get work.
Don't do that.
I can't stay with you feeling the way you do.
You know why I do.
I know. You've got some misguided notion.
It's not misguided. He's made you the wife of a criminal. He's done damage that'll last a lifetime. Maybe it's only one mistake, but why should you get a bad name?
Going, Ma, and I'm not coming back.
Please don't, Allie. Hasn't he caused us enough trouble?
I'm going to get that money for him somehow. You can call the FBI like you did last time and tell them that.
Allie.
What?
He's not worth all this, believe me.
Maybe he isn't. Maybe I'm not either.
Allie, don't go.
Stanley needs me, Ma. You don't. I have to do what I can for him.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the bungler in just a moment.
Friends, this is Jimmy Wallington. You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was born in Cincinnati, Ohio in 1857, the son of an eminent jurist and statesman. After graduating from Yale University, he served in various federal, state, and academic positions until 1901, when he became our first civil governor of the Philippine Islands. In 1904, he entered President Theodore Roosevelt's cabinet as Secretary of War and served until 1908, when he was nominated for and elected to the presidency. After his term in our highest office, he was appointed Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court and served in that position until 1930. And you should have his name by now, but in case you don't, here's one more important clue. His son was an unsuccessful candidate for nomination by his party for the office of president. Yes, he was William Howard Taft, 27th President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
And now, Act Three of tonight's story, The Bungler.
Several days after we had seen Dr. Evans and the owner of the Marine Station, we decided to have one more talk with Philip's wife. We had hoped that her attitude might have changed since our last visit, so we were not prepared for the news we heard from her mother, Mrs. Baker.
She hasn't even phoned, so I don't know where she is. I tried all of her friends, but not a one of them heard from her.
Do you think she knows where her husband is and may have gone to him?
She couldn't have. She just couldn't have.
But he did get in touch with her again and ask for money.
Yes, he did. That's what we had to fight about.
Did he write to her? Did you see a letter?
No, I didn't see a letter. I've been watching the mail every day.
Do you think he might have been here in Bridgetown?
I just don't know. I came home Monday afternoon, and Allie was waiting for me. She'd been crying. I could see that. And then out of the blue, she asked me for $200 to take a secretarial course. I knew right away it was for him.
And there hadn't been any letter that day?
No, I'm sure.
So the chances are good that he came here and saw her?
Yes, I guess so. Oh, I know I shouldn't say this for her sake, but I wish you'd find him. I wish it was over.
Did your daughter have any money, Mrs. Baker?
Just what was in her purse, a few dollars.
So she couldn't have gone very far to meet him, if she did meet him.
How could she see him? He's no better than a common sneak thief. How could she want someone like that?
It works out that way, Mrs. Baker, quite often.
I just don't understand it. If he was half a man or half a crook, but he's just a bungler.
Mrs. Baker, do you have a recent picture of your daughter?
I have a snapshot from the beach last year.
That'll do.
You don't really think she's gone to him, do you?
I'm afraid I do, Mrs. Baker. From all you've told us, it looks like a familiar story. Your daughter feels that her husband needs her. That's a pretty hard pull for any woman to resist.
And I dreamed you were all alone here, and you were sick, and they came to get you, and then you called me, and you kept calling and calling, and I couldn't get to help you.
I know, Allie, but you shouldn't have come here.
I had to, Stanley. I'll go back now if you want, but I had to
no,
see...
No, don't go back.
I had to see if you were all right.
Oh, Allie...
I'll go tomorrow.
No, don't, please.
Yes, I'd better. I'll have to get some money for you, Stan, somehow.
I don't want you to go.
But I've only got $6. How could...
I'll get the money, Allie.
Stanley.
I will. I'll get it. Listen, Allie, if I get enough for us to go away from here, say to New York or some big city, I could grow a mustache and dye my hair.
You're not well enough to go anyplace, Stan. You're back.
Never mind that. Allie, we could begin all over again. A clean slate. No more mistakes.
If you really want to start fresh, Stanley...
No, don't talk about that anymore.
But it's your first offense. They wouldn't give you a long term, and I'd wait, Stanley.
I won't go to jail. I couldn't stand that.
I guess you couldn't.
Look, Allie, I'm going to get that money, and then you and I are going to start all over again. Listen, it'll be great, like a honeymoon, Mr. and Mrs. Fred Milson. There are plenty of boatyards around New York. I could sort of fake a set of references from here in Bay City. What's the matter, Allie? What are you crying about?
Nothing, Stan. Just crying.
Well, you can stop crying. We're going to start all over again. I'm going to get that money tomorrow. You wait and see. So that's why I come to see you, Mr. Wrigley. I figured maybe you'd lend me the money.
Why did you figure that, Fred?
Well, after all, I hurt my back lifting a motor while I was on the job here.
Well, this is the first time I heard of that.
Well, I did. Lifting that big 25 horse out of Mr. Clifford's boat. I figure you owe me compensation.
How much compensation, Fred?
$1,000.
It's a lot of money.
Well, you've got it in the register right now. I know how much you take in on a big weekend like this.
You expect me to hand
over... I said it'd be a loan, didn't I?
And if I don't give it to you?
You will, Mr. Wrigley. I have to have that money.
Well, I'm sorry, Fred. I don't feel I owe you anything. But look, if you'll come back tomorrow morning...
I want the money now.
Now, listen, be reasonable.
Now, Mr. Wrigley!
Put that gun down, Fred. That won't get you anywhere.
Open the cash register.
Believe me.
Open it, Mr. Wrigley.
Okay.
All right, now step back away from there. Step away from the cash register, Mr. Wrigley.
Fred, you know something?
Do what I say.
You know, I ought to have my glasses fixed. That's not a gun, Fred. That's just a $3 cigarette lighter. I used to own one like that.
Get away from there or I'll shoot.
Go ahead. Go on, Fred. Shoot. Nothing but a cheap cigarette lighter.
Let go! Look out, Mr. Wrigley. You're hurting my back. Let go. Please let me go. I will, Freddy. Just as soon as I call a couple of government men who are in here looking for you.
Please, Mr. Wrigley, let go. I was only joking. It was all a joke, Mr. Wrigley.
Yeah, I know it was. And you bungled it, Freddy. Oh, excuse me. Stanley. That's your right name, isn't it? You bungled it, Stanley. All the way.
Stanley Phillips offered no defense to the charge of embezzlement or to his attempt at a holdup. In view of this serious complication to the original theft from the bank, Phillips received a sentence of 5 to 8 years in prison. His wife, Alice, said she'd wait for him. But we understand that now, after 3 years, she may be changing her mind about the bungler. Tonight's transcribed story, Rosemary Rice played the part of Alice Phillips, and Bob Reddick was Stanley Phillips. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Louis Pelletier. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based upon Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. And the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.